member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 16th of June, Anno Domini 2012, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues, and give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free. 1-800-790-0415.
And to kick it all off, which we should warn folks ahead of time, just to give them fair warning, tomorrow is
Father's Day. Now, right. All of you gentlemen listening, you don't have much to do except, of course, to get a nice gift for your own fathers. All you ladies listening, you're way ahead of us already. You know that.
Hopefully.
All you young folks out there listening, don't forget to get something nice for your dads, a card at the very least. Also, let me remind everybody that it is Bloomsday. Happy Bloomsday. James Joyce's Ulysses took place on this day, so if you're pub crawling, be safe. That's
I was thinking Bloom County, no?
No. Ulysses, James Joyce's Ulysses actually took place on this date, June 16th. He set it on that date because that's the date he met his wife.
Oh,
how sweet is that?
That's very appropriate.
My wife and son have told me they have a special day planned for me for Father's Day, and I don't have to pay for it.
Wow.
I'll believe that when I see it.
Well, wait a minute. Now, look, they could clarify that you don't have to pay for it then.
Yeah, right.
You might pay for it later.
And ain't that the truth?
I mean, you know, pay me now. You know, the old typical, pay me now or pay me later.
That's right.
Yeah, she already said something. We're supposed to go away in July to a big convention up in Toronto that we go to a lot. And she said she wants to return something that I bought her so that she can have the money for the Toronto trip. She says, well, if I bought it, I get the money back, don't I?
Yeah, no. No, that's never happened. No, what we no.
What planet do you live
yeah,
on?
Yeah, that's
dude?
Never happened. No.
Well, it goes back on my credit card. So.
What's hers is hers, what's yours is yep. hers.
See, and this is the difference between my wife and my daughter. When I give them money to get something, and they come back and I say, where's the change? My daughter gives me this wide-eyed, innocent look like she doesn't understand English anymore. My wife just glares.
Yeah.
There's the difference there.
There was no change.
Yeah, right. Change?
Do I
change? Buy new underwear.
Changed that wad of money into this thing for you. Here.
Yeah, there you go.
Right. All right, let's go to the news. Yeah, right. Let's go to the news. Monday at the Worldwide Developers Conference, Apple released a slew of announcements covering a wide range of products. Here's just a bit of what happened. There are now 400 million user accounts in the Apple iTunes store, each with a credit card attached. Customers have downloaded some 30 billion apps in total, which is a staggering figure. That has led Apple to pay out over $5 billion to developers. The MacBook Air line will receive Ivy Bridge-class processors from Intel. They run up to 3.2 gigahertz. Graphics performance will improve up to 60%. Also in the new Air, solid-state drives of up to 512 gigabytes. The Air line is also receiving USB 3.0, and pricing dropped about $100 a unit. The MacBook Pro line is also making the shift to Ivy Bridge processors. They will sport processors up to a quad-core 2.7 gigahertz Intel i7. The 15-inch Pro is having its integrated graphics performance improved. The new Pros can use GeForce 650M Kepler architecture cards. Apple also announced a new MacBook Pro, one that is very thin. The new unit, which looks like a MacBook Air in many respects, is only 0.71 inches thick. Apple says it's as thin as an Air. It sports a Retina display, weighs 4.6 pounds, and the screen is 15.4 inches across. Apple officially announced the next version of OS X, Mountain Lion. Aren't they going to run out of impressive cats? I mean, eventually it'll be like OS X Siamese.
Ocelot.
Or Osolittle, at least.
Yeah, serval.
Yeah, right. Right.
Well,
it's the civet.
It's specifically the large roaring cat, family Pantheris.
Right.
I looked that up once.
Very good.
Three new OS X apps will be present. Messages, reminders, and notes. Of course, Messages is having its problems these days. Also announced was a new build of Safari featuring a new Omnibar, which will allow for searches and URLs to be typed in the same area, much like Chrome has always been doing. Game Center is also being released for the Mac. Interplay between iOS and OS X will be supported for both head-to-head and turn-based games. Essentially, your Game Center account is the same on the go and at your desk. iOS 6 will contain some 200 new... I heard a report earlier this week where the guy insisted on calling it iOS. And I thought, you really don't normally cover Macs, do you? iOS 6 will contain some 200 new features, including additions to Siri. Sports capabilities have been added because apparently you couldn't ask about sports before?
It would send you to a web search. Now it just gives you the answer.
Oh, okay. As have new abilities to handle restaurant-related queries and movies. Siri will also support more languages in its coming versions, including Mandarin, two forms of Cantonese, French, German for Switzerland, and Korean. You can now tweet by talking to your phone. Wow!
Everything that Siri did before Apple bought them, pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. And it's the same thing my Android phone has been doing since the day I bought it.
Yeah.
Siri will be coming to the new iPad, which is nice. Facebook integration is a key component of iOS 6. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is the new Macs. And your choices are must have, could be interesting, and yawn. So far, we've got approximately 37 votes. A vast majority of you could not care less. Some of you think it could be interesting, and absolutely nobody must have it. And I think that's been kind of, you know, aside from the fanboys who cannot live without the latest thing, everybody's saying, well, it's nice, but again, it's evolutionary, not revolutionary, yeah. And they were expecting more.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, when you're done taking the poll, we know you'll have more to say.
You mean it doesn't float?
It doesn't.
It doesn't hover?
It doesn't hover, and it doesn't glow in the dark, and it doesn't follow
Well, actually,
around.
It does glow in the dark.
if it's on, it's open. Yes, yeah. It does.
Lights the way.
So if you check the yellow box underneath the poll and click on Give Us Your Opinion, it will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Where you can enter your opinion. What do you think of the new announcements from Apple? Keep it clean, please. And, of course, that's our question to you. So, please, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415.
During the keynote presentation that they were showing off, when they were talking about Game Center and being able to play games between your Mac and your iPad, a surprisingly familiar white racing-suited figure walked out on stage to play the game. They called him Racer X. No, not Racer X. That's Speed Racer. Driver X.
Driver X, because they can't use Stig.
No infringement intended.
Yeah, exactly.
But we all knew it was the Stig.
Yeah, right.
The Stig's American cousin. Yeah.
Well, that's the point. I mean, it could be anybody and everybody in that suit.
Yep.
All right, to the phones. Our first caller, Linda from Greece, New York. Welcome, Linda. How are you?
Good. How are you guys?
Peachy, thanks. What's up?
Okay, I got a question for you. I've got a computer that Dave set up a while back, and I only use it to make Hallmark cards and, you know, for my iTunes. I don't use it for anything else because I got my iPad. About 4 days ago, on my iPad, I get about 20 of these. Mail domain cannot send this email out. I haven't sent emails out in about 3-4 weeks. Why am I getting this? It says failure to send this email out, and it's about 20 of them.
And you got this on your iPad?
Or on the computer?
On the computer?
No, I have an iPad and iTouch. I check my mail that way because I don't go into my computer, and I got it on both.
Yeah, it's probably what we call mail spoofing.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody you know has a mass mailing virus, and the virus is sending itself in your name.
Well, I don't open that. I just delete them.
Yeah. So yes, what, and what's happening is when the virus tries to send a message and there's a problem, the way the mail system works is if a message can't be delivered, it returns a message back to the sender to let them know. So all of the bad email messages that the virus is trying to send on someone else's machine are coming back to you because it's using your name.
Yeah, but I have got so much security on this thing.
How- right. It's not you. It's somebody else is infected. And they're using your name, or what? Well, not they are. They're the virus is using your name to send mail. See, I can send mail from my computer using your name, and you get the replies because I used your name. So it's nothing on your computer. It's someone you know has a mass mailing virus.
Wow.
And what will likely happen is their internet provider will shut down their mail service.
Okay.
Until they get their machine cleaned. Theoretically, they shut down the mail service. That person calls the ISP to find out what's wrong.
Uh-huh.
And the ISP tells them that they must have a mass mailing virus.
So something I did.
No. Okay. Just bad luck.
I go, you know, because my computer's Windows XP, it's so old. I don't have enough money to make it Windows 7. I've got a Windows 7 laptop, so it's mostly a music storage system.
Yeah. Yeah, just bad luck that somebody you know has
in
a virus,
timing.
And
yeah.
it picked your name out of their address book.
Jeez! Well, I don't want to get that friendly.
Yeah, right.
Okay, you said something about Siri for iPads?
Yes, yeah, Siri is coming out for iPad.
Ooh,
in iOS 6.
Can't hear when?
Yeah. Later this fall is all they said.
Ooh, that's cool.
Which probably means the September-October iPod announcement, where they announce new iPods, new iPhones, and then shipping with the new iOS. Now, the big thing to remember is this conference this week was a developer conference for Apple. So it's all people who write programs.
Uh-huh.
So they need to have the operating system sooner so they can get programs written for it so when it comes out, it works. So that's why a lot of this stuff isn't available to the public yet, because it was announced for developers.
Okay. Any idea what it's going to cost?
Probably free if they follow a pattern.
Wow. Okay.
Well, that was the other big thing with.
I'm not sure I'm going to be able to get Windows 7 this year for my desktop. Will I be able to get it after Windows 8 comes out?
Depends. It depends on your. Yes, 10 to 1 odds, you'll still be able to for a good year. I mean, because the market's still saturated, you know, a lot of places still have it on the shelves and all that type of stuff. And I kind of think it's going to hang around like Windows 98 did when Vista came out.
I don't think it's going to hang around as long as XP did. You can still barely buy XP machines new now that Windows 7 fixed all the Vista problems.
But you can't buy upgrades,
yeah.
Which is what Linda's going to want.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's...
No, actually... I don't. I think you've told me. Don't shoot me if I'm wrong. That don't upgrade. Just buy a whole new version.
Right.
Of Windows 7.
Right. That system probably wouldn't take full advantage.
Functionally better anyway. Yeah.
Yes. So, of going from XP up to Windows 7.
So, Dave, if I came to you, let's say next spring, would you still be able to do it for me?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, we can't promise anything because we don't know what Microsoft is going to do.
They're saying right now, I mean, from all the reports, there's a lot of mixed reviews on this new Windows 8. And a lot of people are saying it's going to meet major resistance.
It's too tablety.
Overall, in the business world, people are not going to switch.
Well, they resist new OSs anyway. Look at how many businesses are still running XP.
Oh, yeah, but this is even going to be more so. And like I've said before, hear me now, remember me later, that I think Windows 8 is headed just like Windows ME, my favorite operating system, along with Vista. It's not going to be a threesome.
Yeah.
Every odd version.
Mm-hmm.
Or every other
version,
which is the even version.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Windows 7 on my laptop, and that's what I wanted.
Oh, it's a great OS in that you can add, you know, depending on the version, you know, go 64-bit and add 8 gig of memory. It utilizes it, and it's just smooth as all get out.
Yeah, I know. I've got a laptop with 64-bit, you know, on it. And, you know, so that's what I want to do for my desktop. but I can't afford it.
No, leave your desktop as it is. When it dies, it dies. Don't worry about that. Just, you're using the laptop for your main functionality. Just keep it at that.
Okay. Yeah, because I'm using my desktop as my iTunes music storage system. That's all.
And that, then keep it at that and go with it.
Okay, thank you, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
Bye.
And one of the other big announcements from Apple at WWDC is that the Mountain Lion operating system is going to cost $19.99 to upgrade, $20 for
nice.
An upgrade, and you're not going to have to already have bought Lion, so you can go from Snow Leopard right to Mountain Lion for $20. So they're dropping the prices and making it easier to upgrade from. It's kind of interesting because you know it's got to have cost them more than that in development costs. Usually when you price a product, it's based on the development cost and how many units you think you're going to sell. So there's that trade-off. You know, it cost you $10 million to develop. We got to sell it for $1,000 and we'll sell, you know, 1,000 of them.
Right.
But if they drop the price enough, they might be able to get it down. In fact, they did announce that the Lion installation, which was $30, is now at 40% of the Mac market, and it took 9 months to reach 40%. And in the Windows market, it took 26 months for Windows 7 to reach 40%, which is somewhat because there's so many more Windows 7 machines. But
right. Before we... Okay. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. Oh, and we'll have Sal from Fairport on the line when we come back as well. But that will be after these important announcements, so stay tuned. And you can also give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 is supported in part by our...
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And before we go back to the phones, Theosis over in the IRC chat reminds me that Siri will only be on the iPad 3, not on the iPad 2, and certainly not on the iPad 1. And now we're back to the phones with Sal from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Sal. What's your question?
Actually, I was just making a comment on how jaded everybody's gotten on Apple announcements. But by the way, it is iPad 2 as well, just not the iPad 1, because I don't think there's no camera on
there. iOS 6 will run on the iPad 2, but Siri will run on the iPad 3. Yep.
There's a little
tiny asterisk and a footnote on the website.
Yeah. I think they're expecting the world out of every Apple announcement now. Amazing.
Well, and that's absolutely true, because for years, that's what happened. You know, you get an iPod, you get the iPod Touch, you get the iPad, you get the MacBook Air, and then, well, we made the MacBook Air a little better, and we brought out...
I don't think they understand the integration of Siri in the phone, where you're able to just tell it, okay, find me directions to this. Along the way, you decide, well, I need to get gas. It finds you... The nearby gas station.
Yeah, the eyes only feature.
Without having to type anything in. Yep. You know?
And the eyes only feature that Apple is building in with car manufacturers.
Right.
Very similar to the Ford Sync system that Ford is doing, where you don't have to look at your screen in order to get this information.
Oh, I'm very excited. The other day I found out that the turn-by-turn directions on the Android phone have gone back to telling me what street I'm supposed to be on. So I'm very excited about that. So now I really don't have to look at my phone ever again while I'm driving. So that's very exciting. But, you know, some people are beginning to point out that all of the things that we're seeing now have been available on Android forever. The 3D view, which, believe me, on any phone is useless. It looks nice on an iPad, I suspect, but on a phone it's just,
noise. I still love when they give directions and it's, you are now coming to Chile.
Yeah, I'd rather have that than turn left here.
Instead of Shylock.
And being able to find the nearest this and that by voice command. I mean, those have been around for a while.
Turn left. You should not do.
Yeah, right.
Recalculating.
It is good that those things are that iPhone is reaching par with that because it keeps all of them on their toes.
Are you getting the interaction like you would versus just it listens and repeats what you do?
Yes, absolutely.
What we hear from
it depends on what you mean by integration. I can say to my phone, find the nearest.
I'm talking about, you say something and it gives you the information back. You're telling me, okay, set me an appointment for 10 a.m. on Monday, such and such date, and it does it on the phone.
Well, there's a program called Skyvee that does all of that. So I've been, if I want to use that, I can use it. But the phone by itself, I can say, find the nearest, pizza parlor or coffee shop or by name, name a company. Been able to do that forever too. So that's all. It's all there. It's just what program are you going to use? Parts of what Siri does are built into the Android operating system. Other parts you need a second program to do.
Right, and I think that's the difference.
Right.
Well, multiple parts you've got to access for the one thing that Siri does.
We were mentioning during the commercial break is that people were counting how many businesses Apple killed during this announcement, at least a dozen, if not more, by building these features into the operating system. Companies that were making those apps separately now have to scramble to figure out something else to do.
No, it depends on how well Apple does it.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, that's where they've always had to differentiate themselves.
They do it very well, usually.
Yeah.
Well, again,
if you're going to make that's one of the unwritten rules in the App Store is you can't duplicate functionality that Apple already has in. Don't waste your time, writing a mapping program because there's one already in the Mac.
Or a browser program.
Or a web browser. Yeah. So it has to do something different enough.
So even if you could do it better, you can't do it.
It has to be different enough to not be identical.
Well, I'm waiting for your Mac to turn around, when you say to go do something, it comes back and says, hell no.
Yeah, I've been playing with a product on the Android called Skyvee, Skyvi.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually pretty cool. I took it off again because it uses too much battery.
What did you do?
It's essentially Siri. It's the stuff that isn't already built in. It does it does all that stuff plus all the other things, and it's actually pretty cool. But after a while, I get tired of my phone talking back to me. I don't need it to sing to me. I don't need it to tell me jokes. I just need it to do what I need it to do. And it's always done that right out of the operating system. So, fine, but fine. I'll look forward to Siri on my iPad except I won't have it because I have iPad too. Because I want that functionality that I've already got on my phone. I would like to have it on my iPad. But it's fun, I guess, to have it talk to you and to ask it to marry you and all that other stuff. But
whatever. Well, and that's what we're hearing from a lot of people is they play with it for a few weeks and then go back to not doing it.
Right.
How many times can you annoy your friend with here's look what Siri can do?
Yep. But it's still pretty cool. It's saying to me.
If you need a lot of hands-free things, if you're driving and you've got to.
But I've had hands-free on my phone since day one. I mean, from my very first.
About having it do things, not just.
Yes,
having...
yes. I could, from day one, on my phone, say, call Elaine, and it would call my wife. Navigate to whatever, and it would take me there. And I, all of those other things. I could say, play something, and it would play that song or that album. So I've always been able to do that. It's
always been built into your phone.
Yes.
Which phone is that?
It's my Android phone. I have had that since the very first Droid that came out, which I bought. That available.
Right,
yes.
And some of that is because a lot of the third-party manufacturers, the Android OS, the Windows Phone OS, have seen what Apple's been doing for the last 6 years and adding to it. So we are doing leapfrog now.
Right. And that's my point, which is that this is only good for all of us because it keeps the leapfrog going. And I love that part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care whether you have... I don't care which operating system you have. I want to see every operating system on a parity with every other because that's only good for all of us because it means the manufacturers have to work harder to differentiate themselves.
Yep.
And then somebody else meets them and
one up,
and it only is good for us.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that part of it.
Got to have the competition.
Very, very happy.
Yeah, otherwise they just sit there and you get complacent.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep, that's exactly right. All right, thanks, Sal.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Yep.
One of the other big features that, they did talk about in Mountain Lion is new integration in iCloud. For everyone that has been using MobileMe, remember that MobileMe shuts down June 30th and stops working. So if you're using MobileMe Gallery, if you're using MobileMe Disk, that's going to shut down, stop working, copy all your data to your local computer. MobileMe Mail, you know, your Mac.com email address will still work, but the gallery has been a big issue for people because it was an easy way to publish your photos to the web. And I've got dozens of galleries over the years from the different Apple products they killed. There was the iTunes gallery they killed, and then the .Mac gallery they killed, and then the MobileMe gallery they're killing. So they've added a feature in iCloud for photo stream sharing. So right now with PhotoStream in Lion, you can synchronize all your photos between your own devices. So you take a picture on your phone and it shows up on your computer automatically.
Mm-hmm.
What they're adding in Mountain Lion and iOS 6 is shared photo streams to the public. So you can pick photos that you want in your photo stream and share it to the public. So anyone you give the address to will be able to see your shared photos like the photo gallery used to work. A lot of people have already switched over to Facebook or Flickr for sharing photos anyway, but it's nice to be integrated into the PhotoStream program and integrated into iTunes or iPhoto on the Mac to easily share your photos like that.
It does kind of freak somebody out, though.
Yeah.
Because about months ago, I was at an event and I was taking pictures, and all of a sudden somebody came up and said, I just got a text from somebody saying, nice picture at the event. I wish I'd been there. How do they know I'm here?
Yeah.
Well, I'm taking pictures. I'm uploading them. They're automatically published, and somebody's watching the stream.
Yep.
That's simple enough.
When PhotoStream first was announced in Lion last year, every photo you published went to your PhotoStream, or every photo you took on your computer or on your iDevice would go into the PhotoStream. And PhotoStream keeps the last 1,000 photos for
right.
you, including the junky photos you didn't mean to take. So an update along the way allows you to selectively delete the photos in your PhotoStream. So you can go back and delete the garbage photos. We joke about that with some people. With film cameras, you were very selective about what pictures you took because it cost money to buy the film. You had 24 shots on the roll, and it cost money to develop the film. And so you were really judicious about what pictures you took. Now you got a 2 gig card in your camera. I can take 10,000 pictures, and I do.
Well, and that's the secret of professional photography.
Yeah.
Not only the eye and the equipment and yep. you know the ability, but also the fact that you take 100,000 pictures and you see 50 of them.
Yeah.
You know. Although I hasten to tell everybody now that I don't automatically publish pictures that I take with my phone. I don't automatically make them public. I make them private because, again, for two reasons. Yep. One is that some of them are simply crap, and so I want to delete them before I make that thing public.
And
secondly, really, it's an invasion of other people's privacy if I automatically just make everything public.
That's a big question we get a lot of often at the store and even here on the show. People will get tagged on a Facebook picture, and you don't want your name published on Facebook for everyone to see. But a friend of yours took a picture, and you know, even someone you don't know took a picture at an event you happen to be at also, and they caught you in the background of the picture. Well, your face gets tagged on it, and suddenly every one of the people following you sees that picture of you drunk at the bar, you know, because someone else had took a picture that you got in.
Right.
And the question is, how do I remove my tags from Facebook? And the answer is you don't. You ask the person that tagged you to remove the tag.
I thought you could remove yourself from being tagged on there and shown on your...
You can
only
now.
Your photo. Oh, that is you remove your photo from other people's accounts?
That I don't know.
You can no, your name. Yeah. Yeah. Name.
Maybe.
Can be removed.
Maybe.
You
can't test it here, of course.
Yeah, I know. But I think you can have it so it doesn't, you know, see your name in the picture. You're just a face in that picture.
So you can remove a tag from someone else's photo.
I think, yeah, because my sister...
Your tag.
Yeah, of my name, because I think I did it on one photo.
That's
somebody
good.
Had up there, and I didn't want it up there. And I took my name off, pretty sure.
The people who tag you in photos just so you'll go and look at them.
Well, that's a spam email and spam text now. Hey, I saw this picture of you last night. You should make check
this
out.
That's spam. That's definitely spam. Yeah. But when you get a note that says you've been tagged in this picture,
and
you go there and it's like two cute little angels chatting, and there's 50 people listed in the picture. Yeah, right.
Give me a break.
Yeah, you can take that away. And also, now I'm getting stuff that people are emailing me or mentioning me directly in Twitter for stuff that.
You know a rat's butt about.
And I have nothing to do with it. They're just so that maybe I'll go look at whatever it is they're doing. I never. Particularly if I know them, I will do that. But when someone who's either marginal or a total stranger to me mentions me in a tweet, I don't go there.
No. Why?
Yeah.
Hell no.
That's not good.
Uh-uh.
We're just finding ways to be more and more spammy and more, hey, this is
well,
how.
Well, it's just like that, what is it, that LinkedIn. With all that junk going on with that, I got out of it.
Yeah,
I don't see any of that stuff there. I'm in LinkedIn, and I've got a lot of professional contacts.
Yeah, it's a really good service that's been corrupted by marginal bad guys.
Yep, I just ignore them. I look at people that I want to look at, and so that all works out for me. But it's all of the social media are that way nowadays. You know, there's just a million different. There's just a million different social media, and all of them want all of your data all the time. We've got an interesting story that I don't remember if I had it in here or not, about Facebook. We're actually getting,
Hold on to that after we maybe.
Yeah.
We're coming up on a break, so maybe after that.
We're going to take a break?
Kind of tease that one. How about that?
I will tease this. I will tell you that the social gaming movement off of Facebook has already begun, and we'll talk about that when we come back, which we will do in just a couple of minutes. So stay tuned. Feel free to go to the fridge or to the tap and quench a little bit of your thirst, but then come on back, and we will give you a little bit more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, and me, Nick Francesco. We are Soundbites, and we come here every week on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And that news item that I teased before we went on break. When it comes to competition for traffic and engagement for social networking, social gaming, is Facebook actually losing? The problems related to the Facebook initial public offering have diverted attention from the state of the business. While the general impression is that Facebook is building and growing, there are more than a few red flags, notably the company's social gaming platform and relationships. Facebook currently earns about 12% of its revenue from social gaming and likely a higher percentage of its profits, led by its deal with key developer partner Zynga. But other game developers, unhappy with the way they are treated by Facebook, are taking their games elsewhere. While it's the biggest platform today, the economics and opportunities to make games on Apple's iOS devices or Google's Android-based devices are luring developers to change their focus away from Facebook. The biggest issue for developers is the way the company ratchets viral marketing efforts up and down depending on the partner. For example, a Facebook user who has 30 friends on his or her friends list will receive updates on the activities of those 30 friends. If one of them starts playing a Zynga game, such as Castleville, the user will likely receive a notification saying so. However, if the friend plays a non-Zynga game, the non-Zynga status update typically won't show up. This status notification is a form of viral marketing and can have a significant impact on the marketing dollars spent by a developer to drive gamers to download and play their game. The only option for developers is to spend more advertising dollars on Facebook to drive downloads because Facebook has shut off viral marketing for every company except Zynga. What is a game developer going to do? Well, the movement off of Facebook has already begun. The first company to acknowledge it publicly was CrowdStar, but it isn't alone. More and more are moving game development off of Facebook to other platforms, but haven't publicly disclosed it yet. Further, Facebook admitted while on its IPO roadshow that advertising dollars were weaker than expected. The news about GM stopping advertising on Facebook doesn't help either. New platforms for social gaming are regularly springing up, and the social gaming market is in its early days. For example, while the tablet market today is currently dominated by Apple's iPad products, there is no clear platform in second place. The emergence of Google, Amazon, or Microsoft as the number two tablet maker in market share behind Apple over the next 12 to 18 months means they will have enough size and reach to lure developers to make exclusive tablet games and not for Facebook. So our question to you, do you play games other than Zynga's on Facebook? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
Is what is it called? PopCap?
Sure.
Is that a publisher?
Publisher.
Isn't that one of them that has a lot of games? I mean, you can go there for free,
right,
and play all kinds of games, whether it's, you know, chess or Bejeweled.
Were they the one that did Draw Something?
I don't know.
They had like 40 or 50 marginally successful games, and then they came out with Draw Something and got bought for $800 million.
Right, exactly. Like all right, listen, folks, while we're on this subject, please do me a favor, personally. Stop inviting me to games on Facebook.
Thank you. Me too.
I don't play games on Facebook. I'm not interested in games on Facebook. And if you keep inviting me, I will drop you as a friend. I'm just done. I don't do games on Facebook.
I do Words with Friends, and I got a few people that I play with. That's the only one that I do.
Yeah. I don't even do that on the. I do that on my iPhone, on my Android phone, but I don't do that on. I don't use Facebook.
Well, see, the only place I do that is on my computer. I don't do it on my phone. I don't do it on my tablet. Right. I just don't want it, you know. And I, like I say, and folks, you know, matter of fact, they even got. I had one person that I was playing Words with Friend with. Got a little ticked because, I sent you a word in the morning. It took you to the next day to do it? I go, yeah.
Some of us have a real life.
Because I don't live there all the time. And if I'm on my computer, yes, it might show in my tabs, that, you know, on Facebook that I'm on, but I'm doing other work.
Right.
Because what folks have to understand was, and my daughter, my sister commented too, well, I was trying to get a hold of you, but you weren't responding back to me, you know, on the instant messenger on Facebook. That's because I have easily 30 tabs open up, and I lose track sometimes of all of them I have on there because I use them from time to time, but I like the convenience that I can just go over in Firefox and click on that tab, and boom, I'm at that page.
I have a friend who's very upset with me because I don't answer instant messages on Facebook at 7 in the morning. If I go on Facebook, it's once or twice a day, once very early in the morning, once very late at night. And at 7 o'clock in the morning, I haven't even had coffee yet, so I'm not really going to chit chat with you because my entire conversation will consist of bear growls.
Yeah, like call me tomorrow.
Yeah,
call me on the phone if you need to talk.
Yeah, that's right. But
it's like God made the phone.
I mean, like you say, it's a game, and you know, I'm sorry, I can't sit there and do a whole Words with Friends game in one day.
Right.
You know, just because all of a sudden you come back with a, you want me to respond right away? No. So I've told them. One word a day. That's the best I can do.
Yep.
I do like Alec Baldwin's latest Capital One commercial. He makes a joke about his Words with Friends mess on the airplane.
Oh, I...
At the end of the commercial, he's talking with the barbarians, and he's typing something on his phone.
Right.
And, you know, can you
on the runway.
Yeah, can you play games on that?
I generally don't, and people get angry with me. I called you. You didn't answer me. I was driving. I don't answer the phone when I'm driving. See, I'm old-fashioned, and I admit this completely. The phone is for my convenience,
not
yours. I answer the phone when I can, and I certainly can't when I'm driving. And I certainly don't answer text when I'm driving.
No.
Took you 10 minutes to answer this text, because for 9 of those minutes, I was driving. That's all there is to that. Yeah. All right, our next caller is James from Rochester, New York. Welcome, James. What's your question?
Good afternoon. I have Windows 7 and the latest Internet Explorer. I'm getting a lot of Internet Explorer has stopped working, and this goes on for like about 2 minutes. What causes this, and how can I fix it or avoid it?
Does this happen every website you go to?
No, I probably get it once a day.
Yeah.
Seems to be, I think it's a little bit more with the videos.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that will cause this. And we're actually seeing it more and more as more and more people put ads on their websites.
I'm not sure what websites it
right,
seems
but
to
here's,
be spread
here's,
around, and I think it's more with the videos, but it's...
But here's what seems to be happening to most people, and we're all seeing it. What happens is the site at the other end is actually what stopped working.
So
because it's waiting to be served an ad to send to you, and so IE thinks something has gone wrong.
So when you go to a website, that website is pulling data from dozens of other computers to build that website you're looking at. All the ads that come up, all the news sites, all the pictures, and what's happening likely is one of those companies sending an ad to put in that website is not responding.
Okay,
and
but
so,
sometimes it seems like I get it after I've been on the website like 5 minutes.
Right. So the next ad is trying to display and can't.
Right.
So
and
it can happen anytime?
At any time.
Mm-hmm.
Not just when you go there.
No, because it might be that the place it's getting its ads from is fine the first half dozen times it asks for an ad. And then the next time it asks for an ad, it has to wait and wait and wait, and that's when you get the problem.
Right. You could be looking at a website and not typing anything yourself,
right.
But then every minute, a new ad will pop up in
the
window.
Whenever it just pops up.
Yeah,
yes.
Right. And it could be one of those ads within that group.
Yeah.
So when you hit it, it might not be on that particular ad. But then when you come back to it, it's all in the timing and that ad and where you are in that cycle of the ads.
It freezes for about a minute or two.
Mm-hmm. And then it comes back.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then it comes back. It says you could either cancel or close or something. I don't know.
The browsers are trying to be smart about that and trying to recognize when something isn't working and stopping that one little thing but letting the rest of the web page open up for you.
Uh-huh.
Right, but sometimes it kind of can't because things happen serially on some pages.
So there's nothing I can do about this.
That's not anything you can do. One of the things that I did is I actually put a file recently on my machine. There's a hosts file, HOSTS.
Mm-hmm.
And that lists all a bunch of stuff that's really mostly hardcore internals of the system. But it also can do redirects of URLs. So, for example, there is an ad server company called Brightcove, BRIGHTCOVE, brightcove.com. And I have redirected that to my machine. Mm-hmm. So what happens is when a web page says, oh, it's time to get an ad from Brightcove, my machine says, oh, I'm Brightcove, and I don't have that ad, so move on.
Right.
Which does two things. First, it's bad because many of these websites depend on advertising to keep themselves going. And if nobody views the ads, then people will stop advertising them, and those websites will have to go away.
Or come up with a different way to get money.
Or start charging you money.
So everybody gets this.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually set it up with about, I don't know, somewhere in the vicinity of 20,000. I pulled on all the lists I could, removed the duplicates, set it up, and there's about 20,000 different places on that list. Now, you can't do that on a Windows machine.
Mm-hmm.
Windows will slow down horribly if your host file is that large.
Yeah, so I'll just live with this.
So pretty much you can live with this.
You can try a different browser like Chrome's Firefox or Safari.
What do you recommend?
Chrome.
Yeah, it can sometimes handle that stuff better.
Yeah, Chrome handles it better than many. The latest version of IE does some sandboxing the way that...
I have the latest version. I don't remember what the number was.
Yeah, nine something.
Nine, yeah.
The way Chrome does. And what that means is if one tab has a problem, often the other tabs will not.
Okay,
unless they're all trying to pull...
Thank you very much. You've been extremely helpful.
Thank you.
Have a nice day.
You too.
That's one of the things that people don't often realize. Safari has this activity viewer that shows me all the sub-links. I haven't found that in Chrome yet.
Yeah, it's,
but I can open a web page... and that may look like one web page to you, but it's pulling things from 100 different URLs, different ads, different pieces of text, different images, and that may be from dozens of different computers. But it takes a while; it takes time to load that stuff in. And if one of those things is stalling, it can prevent the entire page from loading. One of the things we've joked about is the ads tend to. Yeah, not exactly, but that's close. The task manager ads tend to hold up the real page from coming in. For some, you know, the ads have higher priority. So if you use an extension like NoScript or AdBlock to block ads on the web pages can load faster. But then again, that's how the web pays for itself. So if you don't load the ads, you may have to start paying. Yourself to get to a page.
And like I was saying before, if that guy's patient enough, like I say,
they'll come back.
Those ads, you know, will run out, and or at least that one in that cycle. But again, Firefox or Chrome?
Yeah, I use Chrome, and often
I use both.
when I'm compiling the news on Friday nights, I often have that problem where I'll open 50 pages. at a time, and they're all pulling ads from the same server. So if one is waiting, 10 are waiting. You know, and then I'll get the box that says, what do you want to do, kill them? Yeah. Or these 10 pages aren't loading. You want to kill them or wait? And I'll say wait, and then another minute goes by, which seems like an hour, by the way, when I just want to compile the news and go to bed. but in another minute, it'll come back. And in fact, last night I didn't have any of that problem because I had my new host file with 20,000 entries in it. Every ad server and every spam server that any one of these people knows about is there.
Okay.
Four big ones, and so I just put those in a host file and it works fine. But I know that that's not something I want to have running normally because I want these people to show ads because I would rather look at the ad and click on one once in a while than pay to go to the website. I mean, be a responsible adult.
And that's what some of the big news sites are doing, Time.com and Wall Street Journal. If you want to look at more than 10 or 20 pages a month, you know, one a day for free,
right. You've
got to pay them some money to see the rest of those pages.
Right. All right. That music tells me that the first hour is done. We have Skip from Henrietta on the line. Please, Skip, stay on the line, and we will get to you when we come back, which we are going to do because we have another hour of this nonsense ahead of us, and we hope that you will be joining us. And who is us? Us am Dave Henright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Skip from West Henrietta, and anybody who calls 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free 1-800-790-0415. I don't say that to make Skip feel less important, of course. All of you are equally important snowflakes all on your own. But we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more sound bites, maybe without Dave, who is choking to death, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Stay tuned.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Skip.
Hello
from
there.
West Henrietta on the line. Welcome, Skip. What's your question?
Okay, I got two if you got time, but I'll start with a more important one. I'm running Windows XP. I had 7 on a new computer for a while and got so pissed off at it I gave it to my son. But I'm still running XP. Anyway, I noticed the other day that I can't get any more of the Yahoo widgets. And then I was looking around to see what to do, and then you can't, with XP, you can't get the Microsoft gadgets. Is there any alternative either to get the Microsoft or to find something else similar?
On Windows XP, what version, what service pack are you on?
3.
Okay. Well, there goes.
Yeah, no, nobody wants to support XP anymore.
Yeah, I know.
So, what particular widgets are you looking for?
I was looking for some newer ones. I mean, I've got a calendar, volume control, weather, little board where you save stuff.
Clipboard?
I've got a number. And yeah. Then my friend was trying to look for one. They're in the gadgets, there's a one for diagnostics for how is your computer doing. He was just kind of wondering why my computer was so slow, and he wanted to look at that. And
wait a minute, you're using Internet Explorer?
Yeah.
Why don't you just go to Firefox, and they've got a lot of different gadgets in it and apps.
They're called add-ins for Firefox. Rather than a gadget on your desktop, it's an add-in for your browser.
And, I mean, there's tons of those, and it would still work with Windows XP.
Had Firefox in for a while, and
again, and what is your browser
I
now?
I got totally pissed. I kept trying to download things.
And you didn't care for that.
What is your browser now?
I couldn't find them all the time, and you know things like that.
It downloads it to the folder marked as a download folder. He said, "IE." Oh,
okay.
Well, I wanted to download them to specific places each time.
There's a
default download folder, so if you don't tell it otherwise, it goes into the default folder. But if you right-click on a link, you can save it in any folder you want to, and that's pretty standard for any browser.
In addition, for most browsers in the setups area, you can have it say, go to this folder or ask me every time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, well, the ask me every time is what Internet Explorer does, and that's what I liked.
Right.
Right, and you can set that on all the other browsers, too.
I mean, it's my computer business, or no, my documents. I never use that. I got separate folders.
Right, yeah, so you just need to change the settings. Yeah.
Or what you can do, what I do, because, you know, trying to change it each time, all I do is have it dump to my desktop. I have it put a download to my desktop. From there, I can then move it to any folder I want. I don't have to worry about, where did I put this one? Did I accidentally put it in this folder or that? I just have it automatically default to my desktop. From there, I can then just copy or move it to whatever folder I want at my convenience. And I don't accidentally put it in a folder I didn't mean to.
Yeah. But the bottom line is that you're trying to use features of a newer OS in the older OS, mm-hmm. and all the software companies have stopped making them available for the older OS.
Well, and in fact, Yahoo seems to have stopped making them available altogether.
Google Desktop did the same thing. It's gone, too.
Yahoo Desktop Widgets Gallery website discontinued on April 11, 2012.
Yeah, because current Mac OS and the current Windows OS both support it in the OS, so it doesn't need to do it on the website.
Right,
right. But XP does not. So it looks like it's not because you're running XP. They just entirely stopped. Now, if you were, as Steve said, if you were to upgrade to Windows 7, then you would be able to download their widgets.
And
there are a ridiculous number of those.
Yeah, I know that.
For most of the...
Somebody made a little adapter to run them, but...
No.
It's a 10-year-old operating system. Yeah. People are giving up on it.
Well, there's still a lot of people using it off when I...
Oh, yeah.
I don't disagree with you at all.
You're talking to the choir here.
Okay, and another quickie if you got time here.
Sure.
I started using C-Clean for getting rid of junk and trash.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
and it's fine. I've excluded a bunch of things in there. I understand how to exclude things
mm-hmm.
when I can read them.
Mm-hmm.
But I've still got a number of things, esoteric little things, that it erases, but I can't figure out what to exclude so it doesn't erase them.
Just do a Google search on that particular item.
Well, what
It'll
sort
give
of things?
More information.
Well, like for one, Microsoft Security Essentials. As soon as I run CClean, it's it comes the little icon down at the bottom says, "Oh, you haven't scanned for a while." So apparently, there's a cookie somewhere that tells when you last scanned.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that disappears somewhere, and I can't figure out. I've gone through the list and saved a bunch of things, but that's one I haven't found.
Well, just scan with Security Essentials, and then it will set a new one for you.
Or turn that one off if you don't need it.
Yeah,
it's Windows.
I see.
I use far more secure products than trying to rely on Windows to protect my machine.
Well, I've had decent luck with that so far.
Well, then, if you're comfortable with it. But then, again, because it's built into the OS, that is always going to come back. Because those security, there's usually like three files that you can delete. But the minute you restart your machine or the security system starts back up, it's going to create them.
Yeah, so the CCleaner deletes those log files. That's one of the things
and
it's supposed to do.
But it turns around and it will recreate them.
Yeah, right.
So that's something,
You can turn off that notification in the security control panel so that it stops notifying you that you haven't scanned for viruses, but that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
I like to scan, so you're saying just if I reset the, rebooted the computer, it would fix that then, you're saying?
Well, not reboot the computer, run Security Essentials again. And then it sets the date that you last scanned.
Okay, I was just hoping some way to do it once a week. If I use the cleaner more often, I just... Okay.
Yeah.
Typically with essentials, it
yeah,
once, once a day is a good scan.
I could tell it to skip erasing, but if you say...
It may be deep in the CCleaner registry somewhere. There may be a list of what it can and cannot scan, but...
Well, there is a list that says exclude this item.
Yeah.
Where you right-click on it, and it gives you a choice to exclude it. But it's just... The matter is which one of thousands is the one to exclude for that. It's not obviously labeled nicely like some things are.
Yeah, usually it'll tell you sometimes the files associated with that process.
Yeah.
If you do a Google search.
I don't know. Okay.
What's your other question?
That was the two questions.
Okay.
So I probably got more, but my mind is not remembering them.
Okay,
welcome to that club. Thanks, Skip.
Thank you.
That's one of the problems with the older OSs is you can't run the newer features on it. So your choice is to accept that or move up to the new OS and try to learn the way it changed things.
And this is likely a case of what we were talking about earlier. Windows 7 has its own set of widgets, and so Yahoo just stopped making widgets.
Yeah, and the Mac OS has its own dashboard widget, so you don't.
And Linux has its own
widgets,
so yeah, absolutely. So,
and in many cases, the things you don't like about the new OS can be changed. There's Lion tweaks for Lion to turn some of the new stuff off and make it go back the way the old way did. There's what's the one for Windows? Power Toys?
Power Toys, yeah.
Something like that will turn off a lot of the new things that make it different. Yeah. But then you never learn the new ways and the new ways might be good for you eventually too.
Exactly. I did see a license plate last night. It was the first three letters of the acronym, CRS, and then it was four numbers. And I saw that pull in, and I started laughing. The guy goes, "What's the matter?" I go, "I suffer from that." He goes, "What?"
And I
told him. He went laughing all the way on in.
Yep. And now, of course, he won't forget his license plate number either. And I think Steve is right. I think as time goes on, we're going to be seeing more and more of this stuff usurped by the operating system, whether it's the phone or the tablet or the desktop or the whatever, and fewer and fewer of these things are going to be available for third parties to make.
It costs companies a lot of money to make this software, especially something like Yahoo and Google that basically do it all for free to the end user. And if the operating system now starts doing it, then you have a free service competing with a free service, then they have to decide if they're going to keep putting money into that when the competition is built into the operating system.
That's exactly right.
Was that on the air or during the break too? How many companies Apple killed with these announcements? Yeah.
Yeah, he said 12.
Yeah, about at least a dozen GPS companies, voice dictation companies.
Well, I own a Garmin, and I have not touched it since I bought my phone.
Yeah.
First Android phone.
Standalone GPS devices have been in trouble since smartphones came out to begin with. But now GPS software, most of the companies, Garmin and TomTom, have created apps for your smartphone because you're not buying standalone devices anymore. Now, you know, with Android and iOS, if turn-by-turn directions is built in, they have to figure out some way to differentiate themselves again.
Of course, for those of you who have limited data plans, maybe a standalone device once again becomes viable.
Yeah, because it doesn't use cellular.
Right. All right, our next caller is Roger from Irondequoit. Welcome, Roger. What's your question?
Not really a question, but a thought on Chip's problem. When you install CCleaner initially, doesn't it bring up a box asking you if you want it to scan for cookies to keep?
Yeah.
If you were to uninstall, I'm running Vista, not XP, but if you were to uninstall CCleaner using Revo Uninstaller, making sure to get everything out of there, and then before putting CCleaner in again, run a scan so that it sees that cookie. Go to any other sites that are going to put in cookies he's going to want to keep, and then install CCleaner. It may pick up those cookies for him.
Yeah,
it's an interesting thought.
That's an interesting thought. But the Microsoft Security Essentials is probably not a cookie. It's probably a registry entry.
Yeah.
I don't have the problem after I run CCleaner on Vista.
Yeah, but you're talking two different OSs.
Microsoft Security Essentials.
It certainly is worth a try. I'm sure Skip is still listening.
I've also found a link on Piriform.
Yeah, I saw that one too.
The publishers of CCleaner, they have a link on how to get back into that list of cookies for you to choose from the list.
Yeah, I've gone back into that because I use a custom homepage through My Way.
Yep.
And I, specified not to take out that cookie. Otherwise, every time I ran CCleaner, I would have to go to the My Way blank page. Sign in, and now it picks up my sign-in cookie every time.
But apparently the Microsoft Security Essentials setting is not described well enough for him to find in that list.
Yeah, but as I said, I when I installed Vista, when I put in CCleaner, I just, allowed it to scan for cookies, and I do not get Microsoft Security Essentials telling me I need to run a scan every time I use CCleaner. And I use CCleaner at the end of every day.
You may have that turned off in the security tab in Windows then, too. Because that's a higher-level function you can also do specifically for Security Essentials to not warn you when it's out of date.
Yeah, no, I have not done that. I have automatic updates, everything like that turned on in Security Essentials.
There's hope for Skip, then. Thank you.
Yep.
But, just a thought, it may work, It's kind of like the subheading says in the forum, software, that stuff that makes your computer do whatever it wants. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah.
Yep.
So.
That is exactly right. All right, thanks.
Thank you for the help.
Thank you. Bye.
That's a very good point. You tell it the cookies that I already have, keep them. Certainly can't hurt to try it. And I know Skip is still listening, and I know Skip just wrote that down and is off to try it himself. It makes sense to me, actually. That's a very clever way to do that. Thank you. Thank you, Roger. All right, our next caller is Mike from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
Thanks, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I have an issue with my video and my audio. They're not in sync. And it's been going on for about 2 weeks now. I didn't know if there was any simple troubleshooting.
In what program?
Any video I download.
What operating system and what program are you using to view the video?
Oh, I have a Firefox browser, and it's Windows Media.
Okay. What's your...
What operating system?
It's XP.
How much memory and what processor?
I'm not sure of that. I know when I bought it that there was a sound card that I had to replace because it wouldn't play right, and I thought that may be an issue again, but I didn't know if there was any troubleshooting I could do.
Here's a couple of things to think about. If your machine is fairly low on RAM or fairly slow in the processor or doesn't have a high-end video card. If what you have downloaded or what you are playing through streaming is a high-definition video, then you may have a lot of problems like that because it can't keep up with the video. So the audio probably plays fine. The video gets out of sync because it can't keep up.
And that's by design.
That's what's interesting is the audio seems to be about 1 second behind. I would think it would be the other way around.
Yeah, it's usually designed so that the audio plays properly and the video catches up. But yeah,
exactly.
if you don't have enough system memory or you don't have enough video card memory, then if you download too high a resolution video, it can't play on your computer.
Now, if you're downloading, well, you're downloading these, right? You're not
streaming.
Well, I even seem to have problems now with, and this just all started popping up. But even with like Netflix, is the silver light, I believe, and even that is it's not coming out smooth.
All right, listen, stay on the line, Mike.
Okay.
We have to take a break. That music tells me that I'm actually past time to take a break. So stay on the line, and we'll pick you up on the other side of this stuff. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Mike from Rochester, and you, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we've still got... No, apparently we don't have Mike on the line anymore. Somebody's calling in. Maybe it's still Mike. But one of the things that that we would like to say to Mike is that if you've got an older machine and if you've got a limited amount of RAM, you might want to shut down everything else you're doing when you're trying to stream video. If you've got a bunch of windows open, or you've got your email program open, or you've got Excel open, or whatever open, that would be a problem.
And if it used to work and now doesn't, what may have happened is there's something in the background eating up your resources.
Could be a malicious
software or something else, eating up your limited RAM and your limited CPU power so that it doesn't have the ability to do that higher quality streaming. So you may want to dance the security tango and make sure you clean everything up. You can also go into your task manager, Control-Alt-Delete, and bring up task manager. And you can see by percentage what's eating up your processor. And that may point you into a direction to help figure out where the problem is.
Right. All right. Our next caller is Bert from Palmyra, New York. Welcome, Bert. What's your question?
Hey, guys. Great show, as always.
Thank you.
Just wondering if any of you had noticed Linux Mint during the last week or two announced a release of what they're calling the Mint Box. It's a CompuLab Fit PC 3 computer with Mint on board.
Yeah.
I was wondering about your take on the Fit PC 3 computers.
Well, I haven't had a lot of experience with them directly. I just haven't. It certainly, one of the nice things about Mint in general is that it's a Linux, so it's very fast. It certainly rings the most out of your processor, so you can run how do I want to put this? A lower-end machine and still get lots of power out of it. So I haven't really paid much attention to it yet since I'm not actually running.
And the Mint Box...
looking for a new box?
Yeah, the Mint Box has two versions, 1 gigahertz and a 1.6 gigahertz.
Right.
And a CPU I've never heard of, the APU GT. Mm. It's not Intel, it's not AMD, it's not ARM, who makes the APU?
I think they said it's Radeon.
Radeon is a video card.
Yeah, that's
from AMD.
This thing is one of the mini PCs.
Right.
It's a little PC, probably not much bigger than the Mac Mini.
It's an AMD Fusion microprocessor.
Yeah,
so it's one of their Fusion where they're linking the CPU and GPU into a tiny little thing.
Yeah, but this has Radeon graphics.
And how much space is on it?
It looks like it's
150 gig hard drive, and you can get 8 gigs of RAM with it.
Yeah, and trust me, for most things when you're running Linux, 8 gigs is more than enough. You'll run everything in RAM, so the speed of the hard drive is less important.
Yeah.
I'm running, one of my machines is a ridiculously ancient box that's probably not a lot faster than this thing. However, the big problem, it's only $550. The big problem will be, because I haven't, the Radeon HD 6320 is a pretty decent graphics chip, but the big problem is going to be video, I think. Certainly depends on what it is you're going to use it for. If it's going to be your main box that you do everything on, you may find that a high-end video, whatever, is a little skanky. But if you're going to use it as a streaming server for your home or a storage device or, you know, regular web browsing and things like that, then you shouldn't have any trouble with that.
Yeah, what I was looking at it as is kind of a inexpensive answer to a dream I have of having a Panasonic Toughbook.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know, with a station at work and be able to just bring the darn thing home and do some stuff from work at home also without worrying about dropping it and bumping it and bouncing it too much.
It looks like a Wi-Fi router.
Yeah, it really does. Yeah,
yeah, it really does. It's very small.
Standard or ribbed?
Yeah, there's no internal cooling fan. They do it by contact and convection and stuff.
Yeah, cool.
Four USB ports sticking out the front?
Yeah, four in the front, four in the back. One of them's USB 3, one's USB, you know, on and on and on. The connectivity is great with it. They've got HDMI port and Bluetooth and the whole nine yards.
Yeah,
sweet.
To me, it looks like a heck of a box. Again, see, I have to equate this in some ways to my Chromebook. I have a CR48, which was the reference model for the Chromebooks. So it's a pretty slow processor. It's a 1.6 gigahertz processor. And it really does everything brilliantly except video.
Yeah.
Everything else is fast and easy and works great. Video's a little choppy.
Yeah.
The newer Chromebooks that have better hardware, I've seen no problems with any of that stuff. But on the old original one, which was really not designed for sale, it was designed for developers, it really does have a few little problems when it comes to video. And you may find the same thing here. I personally, myself, would wait until I had seen some good reviews on it.
Yeah, yeah. This is the beta version. Wait for the big release.
Right, absolutely. It sure does look like it would be awfully useful, though, if you know, you're really interested in... well, it depends on what you're interested in. You know, there's also the Chrome boxes that are coming out. Same idea, you know? So if most of what you do is... If 99.9% of what you do is online, then maybe a Chrome box is what you want, or you know... one of the Linux on a stick things, or you know, any of those other things. There's lots and lots of things you can look at, but they're all going to have certain things that are not great.
Yep. Very good. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. It does look like a pretty neat toy, though.
I do want to say, though, if Mike still had a question, I don't know what happened there. He kind of got dropped. We didn't hang up on him, and I just potted him down, and he hung up. So if he still has a question, please, by all means, call us back.
Yeah, absolutely.
We weren't trying to be rude or anything else.
And here's another news item. Giving is receiving is an old adage that doesn't work for everyone, at least not when it comes to Wi-Fi. Few of us are happy to discover unauthorized users have been leeching bandwidth off our hotspot signals. But a new kind of Wi-Fi hotspot launching later this year wants to change that. It's called karma. And like the regular kind of karma, it works by returning to you what you share with others, in this case, Wi-Fi. Anyone in the vicinity can log on to your karma Wi-Fi hotspot for a pay-as-you-go fee of $14 per gigabyte of data. In return for each person who purchases connectivity through your device, you earn 100 megabytes of free data, about enough to browse the internet for 5 hours and open about 10,000 emails. This is not tied to a device or to a network, but to you, co-founder Steve Van Well explains. In other words, you can use data purchased or earned over one Karma Wi-Fi hotspot to log on to another one. There are no contracts, overage fees, or subscriptions. The startup expects to begin shipping hotspots by the end of 2012. The hotspots will sell for $69 and can support up to 8 devices. Karma isn't a broadband provider itself, but does partner with providers, and it adds a subtle social layer to sharing Wi-Fi. Users log into their accounts via Facebook so that hotspot owners can see who is using their device, and they can send a thank you note to a device owner after using it. If it catches on, Karma could make connecting to the internet anywhere easier. How many times have you turned on a connected device in a hotel room or restaurant and found a list of private locked networks but no Wi-Fi access? Ultimately, whether or not Karma is a good deal depends on your device and data habits. AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile all offer 5 gig of data per month starting at $50. So if you use more than that, if you want to watch a lot of Netflix on your iPad, say, Karma could help you avoid expensive overages, especially if you're sharing your signal a lot and earning free bandwidth. So will you be giving Karma Wi-Fi a try? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415.
So then you can always ask the question, do you have good Karma or not?
That's exactly right. It's $14 for a gig. So if I set up a Wi-Fi spot, you can log in. You log in with your Facebook account. You pay $14, you get a gig of data while you're sitting there. I then earn 100 megabytes free. Anybody who logs in can use it. Mm-hmm. Of course, I can use it myself.
Yeah.
And pay the $14 just like everybody else is doing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an interesting way to do that. I mean, if you've got, and I think it uses WiMAX, which is still out there and still usable. Lots of people have it. Have access to it. I mean, it's in a lot of places, certainly mm-hmm. here in Western New York. So
very popular all the way around.
Right. So if you're in places that don't have a free available Wi-Fi, you can set it up and let anybody connect for $14 a gig.
It reminds me a little bit of the Boingo Wi-Fi hotspot service, where you join the Boingo service and they have partner hotspots all over the country for you to use from whatever service you happen to connect to.
But there's so many places you can go around and get free Wi-Fi.
Well, but the point for this really is those places where there isn't any free.
Oh, yeah. No, there are occasions when it'd be nice to have it, and I'll admit I don't.
Yep.
What are you going to do?
All right. Our next caller is Gerd from Victor, New York. Hiya, Gerd. What's up?
Well, first of all, I want to say happy Father's Day to the three of you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
And I got a couple of questions. I don't know whether the man's name was Fred or Ted. Anyway, you guys were talking about CC Cleaner and security essentials, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
Right.
Is there such a thing as overkill? I have security essential, super anti-spyware professional, Norton Internet Security, and CC Cleaner. Is that too much?
The short answer is yes, there is such a thing as overkill, and you might be close to it.
Yeah, you might. Well, it depends. Now, my favorite answer, it depends. The question really is, how many of these things do you run simultaneously?
None.
Well, there you are then. Generally speaking, here's the deal. You want to have one program running antivirus continuously.
Okay, so...
That's important. But that's an antivirus thing. That's something that will do that. You want another one that will run anti-Trojan stuff. So, for example, I run ClamAV on my Linux box here. I also have a program called Web of Trust, which runs in my browser. So Web of Trust says, oh, you're about to click on this website. You know what? This site has a poor reputation. Are you sure you want to go there?
Norton does that.
Yeah, and so I will say no.
Okay.
Whereas ClamAV only checks for viruses. So if you've got a program that will do all those, and I was about to say Norton and a couple of others will do all of those things.
How about Microsoft Security Essentials?
That does some of those things, but not all of those things.
Okay.
So you want one to be running all the time.
Like Norton or like Microsoft.
Right. And you want that to be
AV,
running.
Yeah.
Right. You want those to be running all the time. One of those.
Okay.
Then the rest of this stuff, when you do things like Dance to Security Tango, you run those things, and that gives you the added protection of things they don't catch. Because when it comes to security, remember, the motto is, yes, I'm paranoid, but am I paranoid enough?
That's me.
And the reality is, no, you're not, no. And so if you need to be a belt and suspenders kind of guy. So what you do is you run an antivirus program all the time, and a product like Norton has other features as well. But then every once in a while, you run the full Security Tango.
Okay.
So that you run other products which may be catching things that your main product misses.
Okay. Next question. Does one erase cookies or not?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Does one erase cookies or not?
Well, that's entirely up to you.
Cookies in general aren't a bad idea.
No.
They help remember things about you on websites that would be hard for you to type back in again, you know, shopping carts and what page you looked at last.
Okay.
The problem is that the advertisers go a little too far sometimes with cookies. And since there are a couple of really large advertisers like DoubleClick, they can put a cookie on one website. And well, the point of cookies is that a third-party cookie, when it sets on a website, nobody else can read that cookie except that company. But okay. Because DoubleClick is such a big company, they can set a cookie on one website. They can read it on a different website. So they can track what websites you've gone to that their tracking that their cookie software is using. And so that's a new initiative in a lot of the browsers coming out now is the new not track headers so that they won't track you from page to page to page. It's not specifically tracking you. It's just a byproduct of the same company putting a cookie on many, many different websites. So if you delete cookies or if you block cookies, you'll find a lot of websites just won't work.
Right.
Because they need that cookie loaded. So
right.
there's a couple of different ways to do it. Is most of the browsers have a setting, about third-party cookies. First-party cookies you want, third-party cookies you usually don't.
And how do you know the difference?
Well, that can wait till after the break.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'm going to hang up. I'll listen.
All right, thanks, Gerd. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Mina Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour, Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, before we go to our next caller, we want to answer Gerd's question about telling the difference between first and third-party cookies.
Well, generally speaking, a first-party cookie is a cookie set by the site you're on. So you go to Amazon. Amazon sets a cookie. So then it can remember your shopping cart, for example. But a company like DoubleClick, who puts an ad on the Amazon webpage, that would be a third-party cookie. And so typically that you would want to block so they can't track you from page to page to page. All of the web browsers have the option to block third-party cookies, but Safari is the only browser that turns that on by default. So if you go into your browser settings, you sometimes have to dig around for it for a while. Sometimes it's under advanced, under privacy, under cookies, something like that. There'll be a checkbox that says block third-party cookies. You still may run into a page now and then that won't work because those cookies are blocked, and then you can add that to the exception list. But the generally speaking, you want cookies on. You just want to block the third-party cookies from tracking you from site to site.
Some browsers actually, for example, on Chrome, you can have an add-on that lets you block or set cookies on a per page basis. So, for example, I have that, and I always allow soundbites.org to set cookies.
Yeah, in the standard Chrome browser under advanced settings, under privacy, under cookies, there's a manage exceptions where you can allow a whitelist of websites you always want to receive third-party cookies from.
Right. All right, on to our next caller, Don from Hilton, New York. Welcome, Don. What's your question?
Well, I now have a severe problem with my computer. I get a signal when it boots. It says runtime error. Program C:/... It says this application has requested the runtime to terminate it in an unusual way. Please contact application support team for more information. And at the top of it, it says Microsoft Visual C++ Runtime Library. And with that, I now cannot get on the internet nor run my printer.
Right. And actually, it says runtime error is C:/...
Yeah.
I'm wondering if he's got a rootkit.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. And it only got partially installed.
No, rootkit error.
Partially removed by something.
Yeah, partially installed, partially removed.
I did recently ran, I think it's supposed to remove rootkits.
And then it started right after that?
Yeah, I come to think of it, yes.
All right, so here's your deal. You know what a rootkit is.
I think I do.
Well, rootkit is a program, a virus, a Trojan, whatever you want to call it, that a malicious program that runs right during the boot process.
Yeah.
So that
before Windows even loads.
Before Windows even mm-hmm. loads. So that what happens is when Windows loads and tries to kill, you know, and your antivirus program loads and tries to kill stuff, it's already running and protecting itself. Now, there are a couple of ways to remove rootkit. The problem is that rootkit is already running. So what I tell people, even in the Security Tango, is if you have a rootkit, you may have to take it to a qualified dealer
mm-hmm.
who can remove that rootkit themselves. And the way they do that is they remove your hard drive, put it as the slave drive in another machine.
On our test bench.
Which they don't boot from. They boot from their master drive and then clean it as if it were a second drive on their machine. That way, the rootkit that's installed on that drive never has a chance to run and therefore cannot protect itself.
We have to do that for not only rootkits, but some Trojans have gotten very clever that it's not definitely in the root, but the minute after the root is loaded, it wants to get in there and take over your machine and block everything, doing everything else. And we found, but like you said, taking the hard drive out, putting it on one of our test benches, we're isolating the issue and can remove it relatively easy.
Yeah, you need to boot a different disk in order to clean the hard drive in your computer.
Okay. I have a second computer. Could I do that myself?
If you're comfortable removing the drive from your first computer and slaving it into the second computer and getting the anti-rootkit software running on the first computer.
I think maybe I better take it into someone.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the deal. It is certainly possible for you to do it yourself, yes.
Yeah.
It is more likely that it would really be better for you to do it.
Yeah, because if you don't know what you're doing,
I'm not sure I could set the other one up as a slave.
That's it, exactly.
Yeah, and I mean, we do it on a daily basis. And
Microsoft has a program recently updated, Windows Defender Offline, which on a clean computer, you download this program and burn it to a CD or flash drive. And then you boot that disk and scan your primary computer. But you have to start with a clean computer to make sure that it itself isn't compromised.
I think my second computer is clean, so I could download that and try that first.
Hmm? Yeah, give it a shot.
What's the name of the program again?
Windows Defender Offline.
Defender Offline.
Right.
Okay, thanks.
Right. And there's also...
It used to be called Spy Sweeper.
Uh-huh. Oh, there you go. And there's also a couple of people somebody in the forums in the IRC chat. Archandra was saying Bart's PE would do that, except Bart's PE doesn't actually have any of that other stuff installed. So, but it's certainly a possibility. That's certainly one way to do something like that. But, yeah, give that a try and let us know how that works out for you.
Okay, I'll call you next week.
Thanks. I'll be interested in seeing how that works for him. It still doesn't have it still doesn't have the Windows offline will. The Windows Defender offline will. Bart's PE programs like that still don't have any of the antivirus stuff.
Yeah. It's one of the nice things about the Macs with the FireWire ports, which is almost all of them, there's a FireWire target mode. And if you power up your computer and hold down the T key, it turns it into an external hard drive. So then you can easily connect it to another computer to do your scans on it. You don't have to pull it out. You don't have to worry about slaving it into another computer. And that's how we did migrations all the time, from taking an old computer and moving all the data to a new computer. It was in target mode. Thunderbolt has target mode, and FireWire does, but USB doesn't do that very well. So you'd have to take the drive out of the computer, put it into a USB chassis, and then scan it on a known clean computer.
Right.
And that's in the caller's case, that may be an issue. A known clean computer, if you've got one computer infected on your home network, they probably all are.
Could be, yeah, especially if you're sharing files and that type of stuff.
Yeah. Some of the bad software even just goes through the network by itself.
Or I was going to say, not even necessarily sharing the file folders, because a lot of folks don't do that. But if they've got one computer in one area and one in another, and they happen to visit the same sites.
Yep.
You can then get, they're two separate computers and they don't share anything. Well, yeah, but if you go on this one and check a site, and then you'll, hey, honey, go check out this site, or kids, go check this out. Boom, they do it on theirs. Now they're infected.
And some of the malicious software looks on your network itself, even if you don't have file sharing turned on your computer. Mm-hmm. If you've got two computers getting to the internet, they are on the same network and sharing network resources.
That's right. That's exactly right.
What was that one? It was a mass mailing virus that was only like 15K, and it had its own SMTP server built into it. It was really impressive programming.
Yeah, programming, yeah.
A full SMTP server, like 15-20K.
Could you imagine, though, taking that mind and actually putting it to some good use?
Yeah. That'd be nice.
Wow.
All right, earlier in the show, at the top of the show, we talked about all the new products that are coming from Apple. Now I have to talk about stuff you're not going to get. One day after announcing the new $2,200 MacBook Pro that sports a high-resolution Retina screen, Apple has exhausted supplies, with the company's online store reporting a wait of 3 to 4 weeks by Tuesday's end. Not surprisingly, someone is trying to cash in by listing the hard-to-find computer on eBay for $1,000 over list. The 15-inch notebook, which Apple has taken to tagging with the brilliantly imaginative title MacBook Pro with Retina Display, was introduced Monday during the keynote address that kicked off Apple's annual Worldwide Developers Conference. As he closed his introduction to the laptop, Phil Schiller, Apple's head of marketing, said the best thing is it's going to start shipping today. That was Monday. But by early Tuesday, the Apple online store changed the status of both configurations to ships 2 to 3 weeks. Starting at $2,199, the MacBook Pro with Retina display is Apple's first in the line, equipped with SSD solid-state drive storage as part of the standard configuration. The notebook's case has been revamped. It's significantly thinner, as we said earlier. It relies on the new and more powerful NVIDIA graphics processor. The notebook also followed the smaller MacBook Air line in doing without an optical drive, but it was the display that earned the laptop early accolades. Brian White, an analyst, said that it was a work of art. It was the highest resolution notebook display available. Macworld also praised the screen, describing it as mind-blowing, but it's also the bottleneck that's crimping supplies. Experts have blamed much of Apple's initial inability to keep up with new iPad demand on the 9.7-inch Retina display. The tablet was Apple's first foray into higher resolution screens larger than the iPhone's 3.5-inch display. Shipping delays for the new iPad stretched for as long as 2 or 3 weeks at one point, but rebounded to 1 to 2 weeks much faster than the 2011 iPad 2, which shipped to some buyers as many as 5 weeks after ordering. By early May, many new iPads were leaving the warehouse 3 to 5 days after an order was placed. But the MacBook Pro screen has 65% more pixels than the new iPads and may be more difficult to make in quantity. Are you desperate for the MacBook Pro with Retina display? You can give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. No, you can't. We're done. No, we're done. What am I thinking?
And the dozen companies, people that ordered them from us this week are desperate to get them.
Yes, but they're not going to get them for weeks.
The ones we ordered day one, we might get.
Yeah, you might get. It's mind-boggling to me that Apple, unless they're not stupid at Apple. So the my only thought is they must be artificially doing it. I'm sorry, I hate to say that, but that's...
No, they're building as many as they can,
well,
we think.
But they should have a backlog.
So yeah, get Foxconn to hire 50,000 more people. Yeah.
Why not? it's probable that it has nothing to do with that and has everything to do with they're getting lower yields than they thought they were going to get. Anyway, we're done. Stay tuned. The German show is next. George plays the best German music you'll hear all week. Linda keeps him in line, so it's safe to listen. We'll see you next week on Soundbites.